Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the October 11, 2022 in-person meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Credit Committee. This meeting is also being conducted telephonically to provide further access for the public. CJ Roteller, Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask participant staff to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel speaking. To clarify, this morning's meeting is the October 12th meeting of the Credit Committee. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information on each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. The Chairman of the Credit Committee, Kevin Orth, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please do state your name prior to speaking. And with that, I will turn it over to Committee Chairman Orth to call the meeting to order.
Great, thanks, Corinne. This is Kevin Orth. I'd now like to call the meeting to order. It's 9:30 a.m. and never a good one.
Roll call.
Would you conduct roll call vote, please, Carol?
Sure thing. Commissioner Orth?
Here.
Commissioner Dwyer?
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral?
Great, thank you. Now I'd like to move to the first agenda item, which is the approval of minutes. I have a motion, please.
I'll move.
So moved. Second. Great, thank you. Moved and seconded. This is item A, I guess, which is minutes of Credit Committee meeting held June 8, 2022. Please conduct a vote.
Certainly. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending approval of the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on June 8, 2022, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. For the record, the ayes appear to have it. Thank you.
We'll do a separate one for the... I have a motion to approve the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on August 10th, 2022.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner Orth, we need you to be the second if...
We're the same vote.
Yes.
Sorry. Got it. All right.
That's all right. Delighted to have your participation. We'll just note it down as Commissioner Orth second. Thank you.
Great. Corinne, would you please conduct a vote on this?
Of course. Commissioners, all those in favor of approval of the minutes of the Credit Committee meeting held on August 10th, 2022, please say aye.
Aye.
The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move on to agenda item number 2, which is recommendation for firm financing for 50 Washington Square located in Newport. And we will have...
Caroline Dylag.
Caroline, present. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Caroline Dylag. I'm here to request the firm approval of a $13.5 million tax-exempt construction loan, of which $4.2 million will remain as permanent debt and a loan from the capital management program in the amount of $750,000. These funds will be used to support the rehab of 50 Washington Square. The building is on the National Register of Historic Places and is located in the center of Newport's historic and downtown commercial district. The structure, originally built in 1911 as the Army-Navy YMCA, was converted in 1988 by Church Community Housing into its current mixed-use structure using income housing tax credits. Currently, the building has 93 apartments that are subsidized with project-based vouchers for Section 8 mod we have subsidies through the McKinney Bento program. The building is also home to the 41-bed McKinney Cooperative Emergency Shelter, as well as several other nonprofit commercial tenants. 50 Washington Square was re-syndicated in 2004, and the 15-year compliance period has been completed. Since preliminary approval in February of 2022, there have been several changes to the deal and the scope of work. Construction costs have increased by $2.5 million. To manage these, the increased construction pricing, you can increase the bond amount by $3.5 million. The permanent loan amount has increased from $2.5 to $4.2 million. And the developer has eliminated the RAD 2 conversion of the McKinney-Bento HAP contract, so that Davis Bacon wage rates would not be triggered. This provided some cost savings and has minimal impact on the rent. Upgrades to some of the residential units will no longer be included in the scope of work, although the developer still plans to complete these upgrades over the next few years as units turn over. The developer will rehab both the exterior and interior of the building, and these improvements include installation of solar panels, installation of HVAC systems with heating and cooling main splits in each unit, refurbishing wood windows and doors, replacement of domestic hot water and storage boilers, installation of a new roof, and replacing and repairing exterior masonry and terracotta building elements. The project conforms to Rhode Island Housing Underwriting Guidelines, with the exception of failing the second bridge loan test. The borrower will be required to execute a guarantee of construction completion, and the initial installment of the syndication is 18%. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I have a motion to approve this.
So moved.
Yeah, and I'll second. Any questions about this one?
Can I ask a couple of questions? So when you have a guarantee from the developer of the loan, do you have a performance bond?
Yes.
So you require that for the amount that he's guaranteeing?
The payment and I'm sorry, this is Ann Berman. The payment and performance bond is for the full construction amount, and it's provided by the contractor, actually.
Okay. By the way, I'm sorry, I forgot to say my name. That's a wire. And do you know what the rents are on these residential?
Yes.
The back of the.
They
are in the RFA.
On page six. Oh, there it is. So they vary depending on unit size and the contract. So there's essentially two half contracts. One's for McKinney-Vento, one through Project Base. So they're based on whatever the requirements are of those programs.
Thank you.
It seems to have gotten simpler, a little simpler, this transaction. But it looks like it could be, I think as you note in here, that they could go in for the RAT after they do this.
Right, 18 months in a day.
Okay, great. So presumably that would put us on better long-term footing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I didn't have any other questions. It'd be great to get this through. And, oh, I'm sorry, one other. The bridge, it has a $9.3 million bridge, approximately. You feel confident in the guarantee and then the 18% upfront is sufficient?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this building, it was the first project that Rhode Island Housing ever, first tax credit project in 1988. Church community has been with it. NEF is, again, as a syndicator, we feel pretty confident in the team and in their ability to deliver this. They've done a lot of research. They've got their subs lined up. National Grid is lined up. They've already, because it's a historic building, you know, there's terracotta tiles that are already in process. So we feel pretty confident.
Okay, great. Any other questions or comments? No? Corinne, would you please take a vote?
Certainly. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for 50 Washington Square in Newport, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Orth, if I could just acknowledge that Commissioner Saul has joined the meeting.
Great. Hi, Josh. We'll now move on to agenda item 3, which is the recommendation for firm approval of financing for the residences at Riverside Square located in East Providence. Jeff, you're going to handle the presentation for us?
I am.
Bench hitting here.
This is Jeff Swanson, bench hitting for Lauren Barlow, Senior Development Officer here at Rhode Island Housing. I've actually been sort of helping guide a colleague on some of these points, so I've had a little involvement. So this isn't totally cold. The request for action this morning is for firm approval of a taxable construction to permanent loan not to exceed $725,000, a home loan of $1,885,000, a housing trust fund loan in the amount of $515,000, all for the residences at Riverside Square in East Providence, typically referred to as RSS. One Neighborhood Builders is the developer, and they were selected by the City of East Providence to revitalize this currently vacant property through a competitive process. Your approval today will enable the new construction of 16 affordable rental units that consists of 6 one-bedroom units and 10 two-bedroom units. And the project is designed to serve a variety of AMI with 30 to 80% incomes. This project essentially received preliminary approval in stages by a funding source. The home and HDA financing were approved by the board on May 20th of last year. CHRI funding was approved by the Housing Resources Commission in November of 2021. And then the capital stack was completed when Rhode Island Rebound's funds were approved by the board this past June. The project has approval from the East Providence Housing Authority to provide 3 project-based vouchers for the 3 one-bedroom, 30% AMI units, and those will be kind of administered in coordination with the Foster Forward Youth Initiative. It is designed for supportive services to assist youth who are aging out of the foster care system to help them transition into adulthood. No promises, but I will do my best to answer any questions based on my 15 minutes of exhaustive preparation.
Thank you for that presentation, Jeff. I have a motion to approve.
So moved.
And I'll second that one. Any questions or comments on this one?
So it's Mr. Stahl here speaking. Just have a question. It says higher costs due to material and labor escalation. Could you just talk about that a little bit? It's a smaller project. There's obviously some fixed costs and per unit that comes up to higher, but was there anything specific to the site that was out of the norm?
At least my understanding is there is, so this was a former jewelry factory. The site has a environmental land use restriction on it. There's a temporary cap, and the building floor foundation is part of it, I think, is managing all of that process in the approvals. That was some of the escalations, but we've also seen, you know, in the last 6-8 months, I think generally I'd say about 30% cost increases for apples to apples work, just based on the state of the economy. And the team may have some additional.
Thank you.
And there are no economies of scale because there's only 16 units, so that's a challenge.
Thank you. Comments or questions on this one? Corinne, would you please this motion?
Yes, this is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for the residences at Riverside Square in East Providence, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion is approved with 2 affirmative votes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Corinne. Now we'll move on to agenda item 4, which is recommendation for firm approval of financing for Riverside Landing and Coventry. And I believe that Dean.
Yes. Hello. This is Dean Harrison. I'll be presenting on the request today for firm commitment of a taxable financing in amount not to exceed $165,000. For Riverside Landing in Coventry. Coventry Housing Associates Corporation is the developer. The project previously received commitment for the rebound funds in June also. The development is an adaptive reuse of two structures located along the Pawtucket River that will provide six townhouse-style two-bedroom units and two single-level two-bedroom units. All the units will be income-restricted to 50% of AMI. The property was originally purchased over 10 years ago by Omni Development Corporation. Over that time, the project stalled due to several factors, including floodplain issues. Since that time, the issues have been resolved, and Omni sold the property to Coventry Housing Associates using the site acquisition funds for the acquisition. Coventry Housing Associates will complete the new construction of the development using proceeds from the taxable financing. BHRI funds an amount of $2,713,357 and $374,750 from rebound production funds, which was approved, as I mentioned, in June this year. The debt service coverage ratio was 115 at BF15. The rents include a 4.5% cushion from the maximum rents of $1,088, and the underwriting meets Rhode Island housing standards.
Great, thank you very much, Dean. I have a motion to approve.
So moved.
And I'll second that one. Any comments or questions about this item?
So, this is Beth Swire, guys. Just one question. It said that the delay had something to do with resolution of floodplain issues. Do you know how those were resolved? Was it a...
They redid the map.
Yeah.
Oh, they redid the map.
Yeah.
They didn't redesign the project.
No.
It's just the team said it wasn't floodplain.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a long time coming.
Okay.
I'm happy to see this across the finish line.
So just to understand, it's no longer in a floodplain, or they redid the maps?
It is
and
no longer in a floodplain and
as a result of
that, as a result of the redoing the map.
Okay. That's good.
So this was an insurance issue that, therefore, or just...
And a construction issue.
Can't build.
We also finance things in a flood zone.
It's a great location. Yeah.
Curious, is the construction designed such that hopefully, if a flood does come, it'll be able to withstand it.
There was no, as I understand, there's no special construction being done.
Okay.
It's obviously to code.
Okay.
Today's code.
Got it. Any other comments or questions about this one? Corinne, would you please conduct a vote?
Yes. Commissioners, if you're in favor of recommending firm approval of financing for Riverside Landing in Coventry, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. That concludes our agenda. Appreciate it. We'll now move on to discussion, pipeline report, and Anne.
Thanks, Chairman. The pipeline continues to move forward. We expect over the next 3 months to bring four of the five 9% deals that were approved in April to the board, working through, construction cost challenges, interest rate increases, which is really it's making things hard. You think with all of this money, it would be really easy to get these projects done, and it's as hard as it's ever been. But staff and our developers are really working collaboratively to move projects through. We are preparing for the next RFP. We're hoping to release it by the end of October, pending PRO and the secretary sign off on all of the various programs. I think there are altogether, we've got, in addition to the 9% allocations and tax-exempt bond financing, 10 sources of financing, some of which are familiar to all of us, some of which are new, so we are very excited about that. And then we've been working with our finance team to sort of forecast what our tax-exempt bond pipeline is going to look like over the next 3 years, and, so we can manage that in coordination with them. So I think we've got a pretty good handle on, 2023 and 2024. So we'll be able to kind of manage how we allocate those dollars to make sure that we're not bumping into volume cap constraint issues. So,
could you expand on that a little bit? If the developer wants to come in and do a 4% transaction, do they need to be concerned about whether there will or will not be bond cap?
So that's what we're looking at now. We wouldn't turn anyone away. We'll make sure that we reserve enough bond cap for any multifamily deal that needs to get done.
Okay, great.
And so that's why we're kind of looking at it on a calendar year basis. We also have the ability, we typically close transactions and warehouse them so that we can bond multiple deals together. Sometimes that allows us to cross calendar years, which then goes into the next allocation of volume cap. So we're going to be talking on a fairly regular basis to manage that. So that's it for the pipeline.
Any construction issues, cost overrun issues? I know there's a lot of those, but any that are you're seeing as a major hurdle to getting to completion?
So the deals that are under construction, I would say that in most cases it's being managed. I don't think there'll be any contingency left over. I think it's all spoken for. It's not easy. There's some sort of on-the-fly value engineering going from both a cost-saving perspective as well as a supply chain. But so far, nothing that we are concerned is going to push out placed in service dates. And as you probably know, the IRS just last week, finally, I think we've been asking for this for about a year, pushed out the placed in service dates for 2021 and 2022 projects. Which is going to help the deals that are just closing now, that receive 2021 credits, and then next year's. So,
you mentioned value engineering, which is going to be very important in this climate. What is the process for getting waivers, say, from design and construction?
I think it's a pretty collaborative one. I think the our design and construction team attends on a fairly regular basis the construction meetings. So they're talking about this stuff often several weeks, even several months before an item actually needs to be procured. So it's pretty collaborative. I don't think we say no. We want to make sure that it's a comparable product,
right?
Because we're concerned about longevity. I mean, once these things are built, the operating budget is fairly constrained, so we want to make sure they're going to put something in that's going to last.
Are you hearing that there's any, I don't know, particular issue?
I don't know. We can certainly talk to our design and construction team to see if there's any particular products that are...
Anything aluminum right now seems to be a challenge.
Right, the design is... It requires specific things you just can't get in the market.
Windows still have a very long lead time, and I can't explain that.
Well, that's always been true about Windows, right? Anybody who's replaced Windows.
Fire equipment components,
right.
Booster pumps, fire panels, and the lights and strobes and things.
Right.
I have about three projects where we're going to be escrowing money just based on the availability. Inability of the vendor
to get right. Okay, so it sounds like flexibility is the key word here. Okay, all right, perfect.
It's a great advantage to have a design and construction team. A lot of places don't have a team of our size that can work hand in hand.
Well, and knows the markets really well and the town contract as well.
Yep. Big advantage for us.
Okay. Any other comments or pipeline?
So just had in terms you had mentioned the tax credit projects. That 4 out of the 5 of them are anticipated to close. By what date, you said?
What I said was they were hoping to bring them to firm approval in either December or January. The fifth one will probably be a couple months behind that.
And just remind me, when it's firm approval, when do they actually close after that?
I'm trying to
just understand how many units we have in the pipeline in the next year or so that are anticipated to close, not just in firm approval, so we can, I'm thinking about how that locks in prices for construction.
60 days, 90 days sometimes. It really depends on the complexity of the deal. We have several that are twinning deals, so that's essentially closing two transactions at once.
It's great for the legal community.
It's great for the legal community and the accountants. You know, ideally we like to get them done in 45 days, Josh, but that's challenging, and particularly as interest rates keep moving, and that's, it adds a degree of complexity that makes it hard to accurately pinpoint how long it takes to close. But, you know, 45 to 90 days. And the reality is most of these deals are new construction. They're not going to, even if they close in January, they can't break ground. So, you know, you want to get them closed so by March 15th they're in the ground.
Let's move on. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item B, which is a state fiscal recovery fund program status update.
Sure. So as many of you may know, the governor and the legislature have made a historic investment of state and fiscal recovery funds in affordable housing to the tune of about $250 million over the next 4 years. These are split up among seven programs primarily, and Rhode Island Housing administers most of those. We have right now two of those programs are actually active because they were part of what was called the governor's down payment back in January. So we have the site acquisition program, which the initial capitalization was $12 million, and it'll be an extra $15 million over the next 3 years. Of that, we've already approved projects at the first stage, waiting for appraisals for some, to the tune of about $11.4 million, which is fantastic. We also have production funds, which we've already allocated $15 million, and there's another $75 million behind that over the next 3 years. Hand-in-hand with the production is $10 million of pre-development funding, which will be, again, these are all broken out over the next few fiscal years. In this fiscal year, just to give you an idea, there's $97 million of the $250 that's going to be available. We also have a $20 million middle income program, which will be analogous to the workforce housing program that we've run for the past few years. We have $30 million in down payment assistance, which will be great to get some first-time home buyers into new homes. It will really be a tremendous investment that will get a lot of people into their first homes, which is fantastic. We have $25 million of community revitalization funds, about $20 million, which will work very similarly to the ARP program, and another $5 million that will be for a home repair program that will be administered by the Secretary in the Department of Housing. And a $10 million pilot program to fund efforts for public housing authorities throughout the state to do some redevelopment work and to, you know, perhaps create some new units and certainly recapitalize maybe some of their existing assets. So it is a really historic opportunity. It represents a great commitment by the state of Rhode Island and a lot of work for us going forward, which is great. We like to be busy, and I think, you know, we'll see over the next few years a higher level of production than we've been able to achieve just because of the availability of these funds. Just to give you an idea of what the process is, because these are federal dollars that come to us through the Department of Treasury, not HUD or the IRS, who we already know very well. So Treasury is a new kind of group of folks to learn and a new group of regulations to learn. The administration of these funds from the federal level to the state departments is handled by the Pandemic Recovery Office, who have been good partners in trying to get these dollars out the door. And what we have done is, in conjunction with the Secretary and the Department of Housing, put together program guidelines for each of these programs, which have been approved by the Secretary, and we've presented to PRO for their approval that they verify that they're an allowable use of these Treasury dollars. PRO will issue a reporting and compliance form for each one of these programs individually, and we have received we've received all of those programs right now. Several of them, SAP has been approved by PRO. Production is in the queue to be approved by PRO very shortly. Middle income is with the Secretary for his review, and we're working on DPA, Community Revitalization, and PHA, which we just got on Monday. So once we complete those forms, they go to the secretary for his approval, then to PRO, and we meet as a group with PRO to get the final approval that they're allowable uses. And once that happens, we can then deploy the funds through the programs. It's our intent to deploy most of these funds through the consolidated application that we have, and allow developers to do kind of one-stop shopping for all of their affordable housing needs. The application is pretty much ready to go. We're just waiting for approval on some of these programs to load them into the app and make them available to the development community. Happy to answer any questions. That was a lot.
We're going to have a test on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Be a scorecard.
Just getting the acronym straight is a challenge.
Right. That's a lot of programs. And as you mentioned, it's Treasury, which has different compliance and procedures than HUD. What is our framework for compliance to make sure we, you know?
So, you know, I tell you.
Do anything outside of the.
While it has, you know, it's not the fastest process, the process with PRO has been very good because that's their primary concern, because they have overall responsibility for the $1 billion that we've gotten in SFRF dollars. And so in our discussions of our program intent and what we would like to do, their role is to say, well, I'm not sure you can, or that sounds good, or is it justified for this population, this income band to be served? And so we've had a lot of discussions with them over the past year, and obviously right now, about exactly that. And we actually do monthly reporting to them and then quarterly reporting on top of that, so they can review what we're doing, see that the money's being spent appropriately, and have any conversations about potential compliance issues before they become a problem.
And do we have we added staff in our compliance or asset management departments for this? How are we going to tackle that?
We have added or are adding someone in finance department to do the general accounting for all this, because it's a ton of money. We have added one staff member in development right now, and as we, you know, as we go along, we have the opportunity to add more folks. There's admin fee to do that. So.
Okay, and then you had mentioned the consolidated application, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Glad I had, but that's a lot of funding sources.
Yeah,
we already had a lot before this came in. So
it's a lot. You know, one or two of them will exist outside of that, probably the PHA program, just because it's a much narrower group of applicants. There's only so many PHAs in the state. Will probably be a separate application, this is probably the easiest way we have to do it, and it's going to be, I think. You know, any developers listening, don't hold me to this, but I think it will be much simpler that way than having it kind of drawn out. And while it's going to be a lot of work in a compressed time frame, it's going to be something that people can rely upon in terms of scheduling and understand exactly what funding's available and, you know, go for what they need all at once rather than have to come back for different bites at different times.
Yeah. And how would that work from the developer's perspective? If they have a project, assume they're looking at it and they're looking at all these different funding programs,
mm-hmm.
and say, oh, I qualify for that one, nah, not that one, but yes, this one and that one.
Mm-hmm.
Do they literally check a couple boxes, or they just kind of say, here it is, you figure out where you're going to pull the money from?
Right. No, we do want them to consciously identify. However, we also have a sort of a caveat that says, you know, we want you to identify it, but we're sort of going to reserve the right to maybe give you another source for two reasons. One is something might be more appropriate for their project, or some of these are limited funds, right? So we want to fund as many projects as we can, and so we want the flexibility to sort of give them something else. And
I think one of the, you know, my office has spoken a lot with our partners at Rhode Island Housing. They've done a great job is just talking to developers about these available sources. In the end of the day, it's all soft debt, right? It's just subsidy that you can put into a project. They have slightly different guidelines depending on the program, allowable uses, but when push comes to shove, it's really just money going into deals, and you have to look at the parameters of those deals. And as Anne was mentioning, they're going to be doing that as part of the intake of applications and the review because it is a lot of acronyms, and development community, I think, here isn't used to having so many sources come in all at once, so there's a little bit of, it could be a little bit of demystification, so to speak, of all these different sources, but at the end of the day, it's just soft money that can go into deals to get things moving and projects closed more quickly.
I think the most important challenge for us is the timing, right? We have expenditure deadlines that have to be met, so that's the greatest lift for the development teams to manage those deadlines to make sure those funds get out the door and, you know, shuffling other resources to the bottom of the pile so we ensure that the funds get expended and don't have to be returned.
Do you have a sense that the developer community is prepared and understands these various programs and is prepared to, you know, make an application? And
I would say hungry for is probably the right way. Yeah, we've had a lot of conversations with folks, you know, not only as part of our QAP process, but specifically to these funds. And I would say that, you know, this is the answer to what people have been asking for a long time, is this level of investment. And while, you know, they are new programs in some ways, that we tried our best to mirror them on existing programs for just that reason. So there's some ease of understanding, and it's not a million questions coming to the development department because they're just coming out of left field type programs. And I think, you know, we've been able to work very collaboratively, he said, with the secretary's team to structure the programs so that they're similar and still address the policy priorities that we want to highlight.
Any questions? Great. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that update.
Yeah, no problem.
It's a busy, exciting time. Yeah. Good. Well, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Please. So moved.
I'll second it. And do you want to take a vote on that?
Commissioners, all those in favor of adjourning this meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion is approved by unanimous vote. Excuse me.
Thank you.
Thank you.